From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
All right, let's get started. It is going to be a huge, huge week. I'm so glad you're here. We have a great guest for you to bring us inside Gaza, inside Israel politics. Ariel Lightstone will be with us. He served as senior advisor to Ambassador David Friedman from 2017 to 2021. He actually knows what's going on and knows the reality of what the impact of what Joe Biden's done and the people that we want to get rid of most, and that's Hamas. We'll discuss that. Hope everyone had a fantastic Mother's Day. Hope you had a great weekend. One of the big stories was that crowd over in Wildwood, New Jersey, that even the biggest Trump detractor has to say, what is going on? Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
None of this is playing out as I thought it would. Trump is now leading in almost all the swing states. I understand that polls are not always accurate, but in general, they have tended to underestimate Donald Trump's support, not overestimate it.
You realize how hard that was for Reed Zakaria to say. He's big anti-Trumper, but he's extremely bright. Stunning. 100,000 gather on a chilly afternoon in Wildwood, New Jersey. Wildwood, New Jersey, a state that Donald Trump lost by 15 points. They wanted to see Trump, even though they couldn't even get close to the stage. They are dead set on KOing these cases. That is Donald Trump's focus, and taking back the White House. That's what he wants to do. And even Dem stalwarts admit Joe's losing.
Number two.
The report by the State Department says it's difficult to conclude whether the unacceptably high civilian death toll is because of Hamas and its strategies and tactics, or because of Israel and how they've conducted this conflict.
Senator Chris Coons cutting him off. That's what President Biden is in the process of doing to Israel as they get set to take down the last Hamas battalions. Furious attacks and Dem spin this weekend. We bring you the most important clashes and more.
Number one.
I will be in D.C. and in New York. Anywhere Mr. Trump deems necessary, I'll be there.
I did not want to go to the White House. I was offered jobs.
That is not true. You did want to go to the White House. Trump trial, most important week to date, as Michael Cohen takes a stand for at least 3 days, maybe more. It's his recordings and his paperwork that can make or break the case. And oh, yeah, the fact that he's a convicted liar who seems hated by all that meet him. We break it down. And by the way, you could always get the podcast wherever you get podcasts, and BrianKilmeadShow.com. All right. So let's begin with the Trump trial and what's going on here. The more we see this trial, the more we realize there's nothing there. If you are caught up in Stormy Daniels and the salacious stuff, just know it has nothing to do with the case. And then when it comes to proving things and bringing up his COO, the CFO, putting him in jail, bringing up his longtime assistants at the White House, as well as the one at Trump Tower, as well as bringing up Hope Hicks, who's been in both. People still like Trump. There's no smoking gun here so far. And I don't sit there and say, I'm not advocating for anything. I just want the lawyers. For example, it doesn't matter if you're a fan. When the game starts, you just got to get the final score. It doesn't mean who you, it doesn't matter who you support. Let's just find out what the score is. Let's find out who's going to win. So when you look at the case, the merits of this case, I looked when first time I realized there was nothing there was Andy McCarthy. He started writing about it. He goes, Brian, that New York case, I don't think you should ever get to trial. And I thought, why? Let me look at it. And it's true. It's a misdemeanor of anything, and there's no way you can get it to be election interference, really? How does it become election interference? Well, they got to prove that Michael Cohen and Donald Trump colluded in order to suppress a story that would hurt him in the election. Meanwhile, non-disclosures agreements are common everywhere, and paying someone to spike a story is not illegal like the Inquirer. But when you see people look at this case and see what's been exposed so far, even before the verdict, they see the polls. And the polls have Donald Trump, again, just came out. If you didn't get these polls, don't worry about it. It's not you. It just happened. In Nevada. Trump is up 20 points. In Michigan, Trump's up 7. In Arizona, Trump's up 7. In Pennsylvania, Trump's up 5. In Wisconsin, he's down 2. And we did not know where we are with places like Virginia and Minnesota, places he's convinced he can flip. Fareed Zakaria said this, and I think it's worthy, just about this trial and where this election's heading. Cut one.
The trials against him keep him in the spotlight, infuriate his base, who sees him as a martyr, and even may serve to make him the object of some sympathy among people in general who believe that his prosecutors are politically motivated. This happens to be true, in my opinion. I doubt the New York indictment would have been brought against a defendant whose name was not Donald Trump.
And for Fareed Zakaria, I watch him every week. I think he's extremely smart. I get a lot out of it. I love foreign policy. And it doesn't matter if I agree with him or not. I just find it interesting to get a perspective and get a lot of these other guys on. So you don't normally see. So Fareed Zakaria to say that is stunning. He basically is advising President Biden, and he sees President Biden screwing up, unable to dig himself out, looking older by the day. So you look at this Trump trial, and you say, what's happening today? Well, Michael Cohen's going on trial. What's significant about that? Well, he's got the paperwork. He's got the $130,000 wire 12 days before the 2016 election, and he got it to Daniels' team in order to pay her off and give the lawyers some money. He's got 11 invoices, 12 vouchers, 11 checks, a total of 34 documents. These are all his. But the question is, how credible is he? Well, numbers are numbers. But fundamentally, you say to yourself, why did Donald Trump write that check? Why did he reimburse or not reimburse? It's on the advice of his lawyer. Who is his lawyer? Michael Cohen. So are you going to convict somebody for following his lawyer's advice because his lawyer testified against him? Is he actually going to say it was Donald Trump's idea to come up with $130,000? There's no way. Here's a little of Michael Cohen and the credibility issues that are going to come out on the stand. Number one, he'd take a bullet for Donald Trump one day. The next day, he'll do anything to make sure Donald Trump goes to prison. He actually went back and countered his plea that he took jail time for and said, well, I never did anything that I did, and just denied what he admitted to under oath when he was convicted. Here's a flashback of some of the different things Michael Cohen has said. Now, keep in mind, the first cut is from January 2017. The second is February of 2019. Then this fellow was set 1 week later in 2019, then 2016, and then 2019 again. Cut two.
I will be in D.C. and in New York, anywhere Mr. Trump deems necessary. I'll be there. I did not want to go to the White House. I was offered jobs.
Not only is Donald Trump not a racist, he believes that all people are part of one race, the human race.
I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man, and he is a cheat.
The words the media should be using to describe Mr. Trump are generous, compassionate, principled, empathetic, kind, humble, honest, and genuine.
He is capable of behaving kindly, but he is not kind. He is capable of committing acts of generosity, but he is not generous. He is capable of being loyal, but he is fundamentally disloyal.
He's also Michael Cohen. Now, I don't have to say anything. You saw his contradictory statements. You saw what he wrote in his book. You saw that the judge recommended he stay out of the media, and he went and amped it up. He was asked over the weekend not to do any media. I don't really follow him. I don't have TikTok, but evidently he was on TikTok. I watched him getting what it looks like an MDX Acura and head to the courtroom today. So he's going to get redemption. On what? I mean, the bigger question is why they raided his office to begin with. I also thought it was bad for the Trump team not to pay his bills. He could have just got rid of one problem, just on a practical basis. But if you look at what people say about him, they hate him. David Pecker, when asked if Cohen was prone to exaggeration, yes, Hicks. He liked to call himself a fixer or Mr. Fix-It, and that's only because he would break it, and then he'd have to fix it. This guy Davidson, who was Stormy Daniels' one-time attorney, says he could be a very aggressive guy. The moral of the story is nobody wanted to talk to Cohen, period. They find him abrasive, and he traded on the president's name. There's no way the president knew everything he was doing. He was hired. I'm not sure why he was hired. He was hired because he owned two Trump apartments, and he was a pretty strong advocate for the board in which he was representing. Trump ended up seeing him, bringing him into the fray, and I guess he's been out of his mind ever since. So we'll see what's going to happen. I'm going to talk a lot about what's going on in Gaza and the contradictions, but I do want to give you an idea of what's going on with this trial. Because right now, Tim Scott was just on our channel talking about what the president wants out, and that is that this is a way to keep Trump off the stump, which is 100% true, because Joe Biden is almost mocking him because he's able to get out there. The problem with Joe Biden, when he gets out there, he's got huge problems because he's a terrible speaker, and he doesn't really know what he's saying. In 17 minutes, they found 15 lies in which he said, big and small. Charles Lane, if anything he leans left, was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos and was asked about the piles, about these trials. Listen, cut six.
The polls say it's not hurting him, and not just this trial is not hurting him, but the three other criminal cases, one in Georgia and the two federal cases, one in Florida, one in Washington, it's hard to keep track sometimes, have caused a lot of hassle, have caused him to sit in a New York courtroom, but haven't really affected the polls in the presidential race, which show him still well-positioned to win.
Yeah, he goes on, cut seven.
And on the testimony this week, you know, don't forget the fact that she, under the prosecution's own direction, kind of strayed into, you know, a lot of detail that's kind of extraneous to business records.
Putting it nicely.
Sets, yes, that's the only way you can put it, sets up a potential appeal issue for the president, a former president, rather, that could then extend this thing even longer. And that is the only case of the four that even stands to finish a trial before November.
Right. I'm not willing to say that the other three trials are all going to be spiked or on delay until the president wins or loses. But they look like they're on case to do that. We still have to wait for the Supreme Court to rule on immunity for the January 6th case. And then which time they might kick it back and say limited immunity, which means they got to go to a lower court and work out what is it, what the president is immune, the former president was immune to because he was president, and what he's not. That'll take even more time. And you don't start a trial within 30 days of election, I don't think, unless you want a civil war. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what happened in Gaza, the contradictions, the pushback, and how if you look at This Week with George Stephanopoulos, you look at Meet the Press, Face the Nation, they have one thing in common. They're all going to bat for the Palestinians, for Hamas, and they're all critical in their questions, their approach, their tone of the IDF. I don't know where they get their talking points, but I think it's from the campus protesters. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Out of the gates and ready to go.
Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan. But you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you subscribe to the podcast, like, subscribe, and share.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I've known Joe Biden for many years, 40 years and more. We often had our agreements, but we've had our disagreements. We've been able to overcome them. I hope we can overcome them now, but we will do what we have to do to protect our country, and that means protect our future. And that means we will defeat Hamas, including in Rafah. We have no other choice.
And I agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu. The pressure he's under is unbelievable, but to me it's simple. You have to win this war. And to win the war, it's wiping out Hamas or remnants of it. You know, Israel also found some documents, and they want to verify them, and they've been verified. Do you know they have basically a KJB inside Gaza and the West Bank, and Hamas finds out everything possible about every single Palestinian. Everything from their love life to their job to their gossip. If they're caught saying anything, almost like North Korea, they kill you. So the Palestinians, in a way, are, I hope, my fingers are crossed. Their real beliefs are held hostage by the fact they're trying to get their family to survive there. And if they are against Hamas, if they come out and speak about it, even in private at a coffee shop, there are eyes and ears everywhere. I guess this KGB is about 850 people. And so what they did is, before they gave this to the Israel government, gave it to the New York Times, and the New York Times went around and verified it, and they called these people. They say, is this true? And they said, yeah, it is true. That's me, and this is what I did, and this is where I worked, because I want to make sure these records are verified. Now, I watched all those people cheered, the Palestinians cheered, as those hostages were brought in to Gaza, and they were spit on, all those hostages, and it's just despicable. I watched them cheer when Saddam Hussein's Scud rockets went into Israel proper. I knew they cheered after they got word about 9/11. I got it. But I'm hope is there's some good people there in the Palestinian world that might be able to take over to a degree, or they just got to get out. They just got to get out. But now the State Department does a story, does a report, and feels as though the IDF could be doing a better job avoiding civilian casualties, but will not say it's an actual crime. And some people are upset by that, like every single network anchor are upset they didn't find them guilty of some type of crime. So Anthony Blinken was out there trying to defend his boss's decision not to ship the 500, 1,500, and 5,000-pound bombs, which were already paid for by Israel, to Israel. And listen to what Blinken had to say, that they still support, but only to a degree. Cut 12.
Most of the population from Gaza, displaced from the north and from central Gaza, has gone to Rafah. There are about 1.4 million people there. And we've said to Israel that we cannot, will not support an operation in Rafah, a major military operation, in the absence of a credible plan to protect civilians.
Well, they've already gotten 300,000 out there. They set up corridors already. Do you know that Senator McCain, and I'm going to play this a little bit later, Cindy McCain, who works, who's working this for the Biden administration, says that they have credible proof that Hamas is stealing all the aid we're sending in and charging the Palestinians if they want to eat. Really? So that's what Israel's saying. We put in aid, we're making sure Hamas lives to fight another day. But still, the report and Blinken and Jake Sullivan and the president want to condemn the IDF. Cut 13.
It's reasonable to conclude that there are instances where Israel has acted in ways that are not consistent with international humanitarian law. At the same time, Kristen, we continue to look at, investigate each of these incidents. It's reasonable to assess, as we say in the report, that there are instances where they've acted inconsistent with their obligations under international humanitarian law.
Can you imagine being judged in the middle of a war by other countries, especially your ally? Can you imagine that? By the way, they do their own investigations. They don't want to get civilians killed either. They're going to hold their people accountable too, like we did at Abu Ghraib. We know that. Different situations. We've had people end up in criminal court because we hold them accountable. You think Hamas is holding anyone accountable? Yeah, you're in trouble with Hamas if you don't kill enough people. So Senator Tom Cotton probably is the most formidable foe on issues and for Republicans out there today. Think about it. You got his background fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. You got his Ivy League education undergrad, and then he got a degree, I think, from Harvard or Yale in law. This guy could not be more qualified. Then he's a congressman. Now he's a two-term senator. I think he's going to end up Secretary of Defense. Here he is yesterday, outraged about the cutoff of weapons and some of the condemnation going around America. Cut 14.
It sounded like a bunch of Weasley, mealy-mouth politics. He said it's reasonable to assess. He said that like three or four times. It's like he was coached to say that as if it was some magic talisman to help them walk the political line they want between the pro-Hamas wing of their party and the vast pro-Israel majority of the American people. The report that they put out Friday night after news deadlines passed was very clear. There is no evidence that Israel is violating international law. All civilian casualties in Gaza are solely the responsibility of Hamas. In fact, Israel is probably doing more than any military in history to avoid civilian casualties.
That's the story. And believe me, they'll write that soon, that Hamas was giving out misinformation and some of these aid groups were not being accurate. That'll be the story after. Don't be wrong. Be right now. And just take all this information coming out of Gaza with a grain of salt.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Any objective observer knows Israel has broken international law. It has broken American law. And in my view, Israel should not be receiving another nickel in U.S. military aid. Look, the facts are quite clear. Hamas is a terrible, disgusting terrorist organization that began this war. But what Israel has done over the last 7 months has not just gone to war against Hamas, it has gone to war against the entire Palestinian people, and the results have been absolutely catastrophic.
Congratulations, Bernie Sanders. I agree with nothing that you've ever said, ever. So this continues, but he's a Jewish guy from Brooklyn who doesn't like Israel and almost immediately started criticizing Israel. Ariel Lightstone joins us now. He served as senior advisor to the U.S. ambassador at the time, David Friedman, from 2017 to 2021, played a critical role in the formation, the execution of the Abraham Accords. Great to see you, Aria. First off, your reaction to Bernie Sanders.
Well, I think you're correct. You are batting 100 with him. He is never right about anything. This is a place that he could not be more incorrect about if he tried.
Is it damaging? Does that word get out that a U.S. senator, pretty well known, condemns Israel? It does matter, doesn't it?
It matters, but it matters in a small comparison to the fact of what the U.S. administration has done. The problem is, I think, that Bernie Sanders is writing foreign policy for Joe Biden. That's the issue. It used to be Bernie was an outlier. I think Bernie today is mainstream Democratic Party, and that terrifies not just Israel, not just Jews in America, but frankly, all American allies around the world.
So where is the Rafah? One of the things is Rafah is the key because we think there's about 8,000, two battalions, 8,000 Hamas fighters still in Rafah. And then the president of the United States says, I don't want him going into Rafah. It's already started, I understand. Where is the Rafah attack plan at right now, do you think?
Well, right now, Israel is giving Biden space still to say that it's just dealing with precise operations, whatever that specifically means. Essentially, when Israel went into Gaza, it went into something similar to what we saw in Iraq with shock and awe. It came in with enormous numbers and tried to divide Gaza, North Gaza, from South Gaza, and then went up to North Gaza and tried to rid it from as many Hamas terrorists as it could, and then moved down to Southern Gaza, leaving this pocket of Rafah left at the end. It's now taken the border in between Rafah, which is the southernmost part of Gaza, and Egypt, and preventing, or is trying to prevent, reinforcements coming in through Egypt, which is where they have the primary smuggling tunnels, and is trying to isolate the ability to connect and to contact Hamas terrorists in Rafah. At the end of the day, it's only the very beginning of what needs to be done.
Wow. Only the very beginning of Rafah, but in terms of your operation, you don't think it's at the beginning, do you?
I mean, fundamentally, if Israel goes home without completing the operation in Rafah, they may as well have not gone into Gaza in the beginning, because what will happen is they will leave Gaza, and as long as Hamas is intact in any way, shape, or form in Rafah or anywhere else in Gaza, as soon as Israel vacates Gaza, nobody else is running in, so Hamas, by definition, will fill that vacuum, and we are back to October 6th all over again.
I see that this published today, I think the New York Times, that they came out and says Israel is able to recover this network. This, it looks like the KGB of Gaza and the West Bank. And they talk about how Hamas had tracked everybody's personal and professional life, anything they said against the organization, against the terrorist group, and they would kill you. And they basically were terrorizing the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip with this about 1,000-person group that basically will infiltrate families and organizations to find out if anyone's speaking out against Hamas. What do you think that says about life in Gaza before the invasion took place?
It says exactly what we knew it to be. It is not a territory. It is not a country. It is a crime family. Hamas is a crime family that competes with other crime families like Islamic Jihad, Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And what they do, they could not care less about the Palestinians. They care completely and totally about owning their fiefdom. Why do they care right now about the tunnels that come from Egypt? Because they make a tax. They get a tax on every person who pays to leave, and they get a tax on every piece of good that comes in. All they do is make money. Look at the leadership of Hamas sitting in Qatar. They are worth more than the top billionaires in the United States of America. I think some total value of the three leaders sitting in Doha is more than $10 billion from U.S. taxpayers and other people attempting to help the Palestinians. If we can go back to Bernie just 1 second. The most fraudulent part about all of their comments, whether it's Bernie or President Biden or Blinken, if they truly cared about the Palestinian people, which they do not, they truly cared about the Palestinian people, they would be standing on top of the table demanding that Israel finish the job in Rafah. Because they know that Hamas hurts the Palestinians far more than Israel would ever hurt the Palestinians.
See, I watched Jen Psaki over the weekend, who's still a spokesperson for the administration, and she says what everybody wants is a ceasefire. No, they don't. People want the hostages out. But a ceasefire without the job done is a victory for Hamas, and that's the way the world would see it. Here's Senator Joe Manchin about the aid you guys are bringing in. This is what he told me on Saturday night, Cut 19.
There's a lot of disturbing things coming out. Cindy McCain, I was with Cindy in the McCain Institute over last weekend, Brian, and Cindy told me, she said, you know what they don't know? She says, I had 30 trucks full of food, 30 trailer trucks that were hijacked by Hamas, that their own people, it wouldn't let them feed their own people. We're not hearing any of that on the news.
You're not. And if we're trying to run it down to verify it, because we had heard that too. But the other thing is they get it and they will sell it back to the Palestinians, aid that we're bringing. Have you heard this?
We've heard it. We've seen it. It's well documented. The fact that it doesn't get into the mainstream media is because it destroys the narrative. There's this concept that Gaza is being starved by Israel. That's baloney. There's more humanitarian aid going to Gaza today than there was prior to the war. The challenge is Hamas takes all of it and gives it to the Hamas leaders and then resells anything else that they need to the people. So Hamas has figured out how to game the system, and they've got Joe Biden firmly on their side.
So, Aria, too, people have said, well, why do you need 5,000-pound bombs? Well, one of the reasons is the tunnels. You got 500 square miles of tunnels. How do you expect to get to them? Well, they're going to be on the ground, and you're going to lose a lot of IDF fighters. I got it. And you guys realize that. And they realize that, I should say. But having said that, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to use bombs that you paid for to blow up an enemy that massacred 2,000 plus of your people. And there's kits that could make these smart devices, that could make them precision weapons, correct?
Absolutely. Today, Israel will finish Rafah. If they use it with precise munitions that they're looking to buy from the United States of America, it will spare more Palestinian civilians. If they don't have the precise munitions, they'll have to use less precise munitions, and that will only hurt the Palestinians. Again, all of this is performance theater. None of this has to do with the care of the Palestinians. If they did, they would come to like secondary thinking, which they're not capable of doing. Here, just so you know, I'm sitting in Israel today. It's Memorial Day in Israel, and this is the most tragic Memorial Day, certainly of my lifetime. And when you're looking at the tragedies of the young men and women who've died in the last 7 months, and they're sitting here looking at the United States of America saying, we're not going to arm you to finish the job, there's a feeling of enormous uncertainty here in the air. It's palpable. You can feel it.
So, Aria, if you're trying to get the Abraham Accords, which they don't want to say Abraham Accords because it's a Trump thing, so they're trying to get Saudi Arabia to recognize Israel and back and forth. Now, if you're trying to get a mutual defense pact, if you're Saudi Arabia, that's one of the things they want. How assured are you right now that America will be there if things get a little dicey? Because war is not pretty. In anybody's war is not pretty. Certainly the way the people you're fighting against, the more people dead, the better. With us, the less people dead. We just want terrorists dead. So Saudi Arabia's got to be saying, why should I sign on to this? When things get tough, America gets going. When America says don't to Iran, they send over 300 rockets. Why should they do it? Don't you think this weakens the case?
It weakens the United States of America broadly across the world and in the region enormously. Look, Lee Smith, who's a fantastic writer, has described that either you're strong or you're dead in the Middle East. And the United States of America is looking to weaken the state of Israel. At the same time, Saudi Arabia has only two choices. It's got China or the United States of America. And because the greatness of the United States of America, we're blessed that they still want us. They still want the United States. But they're double checking that, or they're thinking about it twice, because they know no matter how much people are suspicious of China, they're likely to be there over the next 50 years. This administration and other administrations like this have proven and continue to prove that they will not be with you when the chips are down. And that's terrifying.
It is. And that great leadership is keeping your focus. And if we had a different leader, they would be constantly speaking about the need to understand that anybody who, innocent people that dies, the blood's on Hamas's hands. The IDF's objective, one of the finest fighting forces in the world, is not to kill one single civilian, but they hide in hospitals, they hide in schools, they hide in playgrounds. You have no choice. This is not going to make you happy, but Senator Chris Murphy is going to bat for Joe Biden. This is his pitch. Tell me if you buy it. Cut 29.
I don't mind the fact that the president isn't paying attention to the politics. And I think, you know, frankly, when you're being a good leader, you are often upsetting people on the right and the left. And so President Biden advertised himself when he ran for office as someone who would often play it down the middle, who would not pay attention to the extremes of the debate and would just do what he thought was right for the country and what the broad middle of the country wants. And I actually think that's where the broad middle of the country is. I think the broad middle of the country wants to support Israel's ability to destroy Hamas, but is very concerned about the fact that there are so many kids dying, that for the last week there's been no humanitarian assistance getting into the country. I think
that's not true. That's not true about assistance getting into the country. But your thought is Joe Biden perceived to be playing it down the middle?
No, Joe Biden is successfully upsetting everybody, specifically because he can't actually choose a cohesive plan. He says one thing and then he does another thing, and nobody likes that. And by the way, that message confusion causes more death and destruction, as Chris Murphy does not point out the fact that the United States of America is now willing to trade intel to Israel in order not to go into Rafah. If the United States of America has intel on where hostages are and where the leadership of Hamas is, where has that intel been for the last 7 months? Do we not know that there are American hostages there?
You're talking about a Washington Post story that cites four administration officials. They don't name them, but says that we have intelligence where Sinwar is and the higher-ups in Hamas in Gaza, and we will give it to Israel if they don't go into Rafah. Whoever thought that that would be acceptable? Whoever thought in a million years we'd be holding back intelligence to Israel? John Kirby denied it, but what do you believe?
Well, I believe the following thing. When I had a chance to work with Ambassador Friedman, the amount of times that he carried intel from Israel to the United States of America in the middle of the night, because Israel came up with intel to save Americans, there was never any hesitation. There was never any pause in terms of whether Israel would share information for the United States of America. There was no barter. There was no trade. It was called a partnership. And to think that the United States of America has intel that would help Israel save their own soldiers and to bring back hostages and hasn't used that intel, to me, it's the most reprehensible form of evil that you can imagine. And the fact that it's being reported, how do you think the Saudis feel? How do you think the Brits feel? At what point in time does anybody believe that this guy, who's supposedly the adult in charge, actually cares about anything other than 100,000 voters in Michigan?
I wish I could push back more, but I just can't. Because you're just making logic. You're not talking about an extremist. You're not talking about a political view. You're talking about backing up an ally, an elite fighting force that prides itself on killing terrorists, not innocent people. And you guys also, I understand, Israel does their own investigations, just like we do with Abu Ghraib and others. When there's an incident of dicey outcome that people think to be investigated, you pull the people out and you do an investigation on it, just like we would do. But now we ask the State Department to use our sources inside Gaza to do a study on how you guys are performing. And among the people that think it should have gone further and condemned Israel's actions as a war crime is Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. Cut 28.
Do you fear that this report helped essentially give political cover to Prime Minister Netanyahu to continue to do what he's doing?
Well, I fear that by not providing an unvarnished accounting of the facts and the law, we have essentially stated that what is happening in Gaza, so for example, with respect to the delivery of humanitarian assistance and the total restriction of delivery of humanitarian assistance since the beginning of the war, by not calling that out flatly and saying that there have been arbitrary restrictions put on it, I fear that we have set a very, very low bar, a very low standard for what's acceptable.
Just want you to understand, final thought here, because this is what you're going to be fighting against or what Israel's going to be fighting against for the next 7 months.
It is not true. He is lying to the people. There is no arbitrary there in the history of warfare. Never has a country spent more time and effort caring about the civilians of their enemy than the country of Israel right now fighting this battle. In the history of all warfare, this has never happened. And to not praise Israel, what's the lesson that Israel's going to learn from all this? They went slowly in order to be precise and to minimize civilian casualties. They're being taken to international criminal court. They're being condemned by the president of the United States of America. Democratic senator after Democratic senator is saying that they are violating international law. So what's the lesson that Israel's going to have? Israel will say, we will destroy Gaza in 3 days from now on, because you can't be more condemned than you are right now. You want to protect Palestinians, praise what Israel is doing and support them in their precision attacks. Don't condemn them, because then they will just follow through on what you're demanding from them.
Aria Lightstone, thanks so much. Served as senior advisor to Ambassador Friedman. Who knows? They might be back together there starting in January of next year. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. Listen, we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. Also, an announcement that you need to hear. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I have to admit, none of this is playing out as I thought it would. Trump is now leading in almost all the swing states. But behind those numbers lie even more troubling details. As someone worried about the prospects of a second Trump term, I think it's best to be honest about reality. I understand that polls are not always accurate, but in general, they have tended to underestimate Donald Trump's support, not overestimate it. I doubt that there are many shy Biden voters in the country.
That is Fareed Zakaria, a vicious anti-Trumper, who can't see Trump straight and doesn't understand some of the good he does. He simplifies his stance on NATO and other things, played down the Abraham Accords. But he is very bright, and he's got a lot of smart people on there. And for him to say that, you should understand. This isn't late night on Fox. This is a guy that hated saying what he was saying, but he knows where this country's going. And he probably saw the 100,000 people that gathered in Wildwood, New Jersey, in very cold temperatures, for even a glimpse at the former president of the United States. You could get George Clooney, you can get Julia Roberts, all on deck to do big fundraisers for Biden. You get Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, all together. They would not have gotten that crowd. One man gets that crowd, and it's President Trump. And I challenge anybody on that. That's not even, I don't even think that's approachable as inaccuracy. Quick announcement. I'm able to get on stage and talk to you guys on the History of Liberty and Laughs tour. Next time we're going to be up is Indianapolis, Indiana. I hope to see everyone there at the Shelton Auditorium on 1000 West 42nd Street. So go get tickets, get VIP tickets too, and the VIP tickets will get me a chance to meet you one-on-one, answer all your questions before the show starts.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, where downtown is where everything's happening. The court case of Michael Cohen's testimony. We're going to get to that with New York Post columnist, award-winning columnist Michael Cohen. Bottom of the hour, Dr. Ben Carson's going to be with us, the 17th Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. You just know he's got a brand new book out. But you just know if Trump wins, he'll be back in the White House. They both really respect each other. He was once one of the nation's finest brain surgeons. And we're going to get to all the exciting things. Hope you had a fantastic Mother's Day here in New York City. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
None of this is playing out as I thought it would. Trump is now leading in almost all the swing states. I understand that polls are not always accurate, but in general, they have tended to underestimate Donald Trump's support, not overestimate it.
Excuse me, Fareed Zakaria? Are you kidding me? Can you believe that? Stunning. Meanwhile, talk about stunning. 100,000 gather on a chilly afternoon in Wildwood, New Jersey, just to hear the former president of the United States speak. No big stars, no Bruce Springsteen, just Donald Trump introduced by the governor of North Dakota. That is a story that no one seems to want to cover.
Number two.
The report by the State Department says it's difficult to conclude whether the unacceptably high civilian death toll is because of Hamas and its strategies and tactics, or because of Israel and how they've conducted this conflict.
Yeah, cutting them off. That was Chris Coons. That's what President Biden is in the process of doing to Israel. so they get set to take down the last Hamas battalion. But it doesn't look like Biden wants that. Furious attacks at Democratic spin this past weekend has them people thinking they're doing the right thing. I don't. We bring you the most important clashes and more.
Number one.
I will be in D.C. and in New York. Anywhere Mr. Trump deems necessary, I'll be there.
I did not want to go to the White House. I was offered jobs.
Really? Not true. Trump trial, most important week to date. Michael Cohen takes the stand. He's on the stand right now. Said a series of things not controversial yet. In his recordings, the paperwork, the bills, the invoices, that'll be the story. Michael Goodwin joins us now with the New York Post. Michael, we have some early reporting about how the testimony's going. When asked, can you recognize Donald Trump, he stood up and pointed to him and said, there he is. Congratulations. That made for television event, not on television. They asked him what he did. He renegotiated deals for Trump. What else he did, he would talk to the press 3 to 4 times a day, trying to amplify good stories and kill bad stories. He made about $525,000. Now the real questions will begin to start. What would you ask him?
Well, good morning, Brian. I think the crux of his testimony is, of course, going to be about the Stormy Daniels so-called hush money and how that money was accounted for in the company's books. I think there's a lot of work to be done to get this jury. Now, assuming the jury is fair-minded and is looking for facts, there have been a lot of distractions. And I think for the defense, what the goal will just show the jury the contradictions that Cohen has laid out before and the fact of his own criminal record, mm-hmm. so that you cast doubt on what he says. And, you know, don't forget, the question for the jury ultimately be, is Donald Trump guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? And the doubts have been piling up, not only about the testimony of Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. There has been testimony that Trump may have just signed these checks without even looking at them because that was his habit. The whole notion that, as Jonathan Turley has pointed out, that there's an underlying crime here is related to the 2016 election is belied by the fact that she was not given the money until after the election, and that the entries were not made until after the election. So this is all about bookkeeping, timing, of course, intent, all of these things, a conspiracy. Trump seems to be involved in a conspiracy of one, which is bizarre, as is this whole idea that somehow voters were deprived of not knowing how terrible a person Donald Trump is. I mean, this case is a pile of nothing, piled on top of nothing, and that is, I think, a clear sign that this is a political prosecution.
Right.
It was done by Alvin Bragg. It is done by Alvin Bragg, the prosecutor of Manhattan, who will let career criminals and murderers even walk free, but thinks Donald Trump mm-hmm. belongs in jail. I mean, this is a prosecution based on politics. There's no question about that. When even people like Fareed Zakaria say that, you know it has broken through the usual ecosystem of what's on conservative media and is now into liberal media. And the mainstream, I think, has seen it from both sides. The question is whether this jury, whether there's anybody on this jury or two or three people who will say no, hell no, this is a con job on the part of the prosecution, and or whether this thing, whether he is convicted,
right.
and then it goes to appeal. But appeal doesn't help now. It should be on the facts now that he is found not guilty so that we can get on with this election without this election.
Cohen's problem is he said, I was lying before because, you know, I was working for Donald Trump and I saw the light when I'm sitting in jail and I realized I was wrong to do that. Couple of things. As late as 6 months ago, Cohen admitted that he lied under oath when he copped his original guilty plea. that prompted an incensed federal judge to denounce him recently as a serial perjurer. Like Lofton, the judge said he wondered whether Cohen was lying to them or lying then, you know, referring back to the movie. So you're going to get up there. The defense, it very calmly, could say, we have no idea what you think, because a lot of it is between those two, Trump and him. Well, Trump knew I was writing those checks. Really? Well, because he was so into every dollar that went out. Okay. According to the other guys, he was into the dollars, but he didn't know everything that was going on. It was listed as a legal expense, which it was. He was an attorney. And are you going to charge him for following his attorney's advice? But you mentioned Fareed Zakaria, a vehement anti-Trumper, who said, listen to the end of this soundbite. It's key. Cut one.
The trials against him keep him in the spotlight, infuriate his base, who sees him as a martyr, and even may serve to make him the object of some sympathy among people in general who believe that his prosecutors are politically motivated. This happens to be true, in my opinion. I doubt the New York indictment would have been brought against a defendant whose name was not Donald Trump.
Excuse me? That wasn't Sean Hannity. That wasn't Michael Goodwin. You know, that is Fareed Zakaria. And then he went on to talk about what's happening with the polls. I'm sure you saw the Siena New York Times poll. For the most part, when you see these polls, you think to yourself, well, you know, we know they're going to be skewed left, so kind of compensate for it. Having said that, they probably still are. Arizona, Trump up 7. Michigan, Trump up 7. In Nevada, Trump up 12. In Pennsylvania, Trump up 5. In Wisconsin, he's down 2. He has a shot in Virginia. He believes he's got a shot in Virginia and in New Jersey. I'm not sure he does. I think Virginia he might. Governor Youngkin's extremely popular, and he's going to get his machine working for him. But your thoughts about these numbers?
Well, Brian, I think it is something to behold. I mean, when you combine what happened in New Jersey over the weekend, and many of those people probably from Pennsylvania as well, 100,000 for a rally in a blue state is a remarkable thing. And you have these polls. Wisconsin is kind of on the edge. It swings back and forth more than most of the others. But when you talk about Nevada, I mean, Nevada has been reliably blue for a long time. Georgia and Arizona have been reliably red, but Biden won them very closely in 2020. So if they can be safely brought back into the Republican column early enough in this process, then I think it's really off to the races, because you've got then you've got real battle in these swing states: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. Those are the three big ones that if Trump can hold the regular red states and pick up, I think, even two of those three, then I think he wins the election. But at this early stage, it's hard to say, but I do think we are seeing the early signs of a groundswell. Now, it's a long way to go, but I do think when you look at the polls, not just in terms of head-to-head, but when you look at Biden's approval numbers, particularly on the economy, I mean, he went around boasting that we fixed the economy, which is the most tone-deaf thing you can say. I think even David Axelrod was saying that is a mistake. People don't believe that. And so you're going out there and you're flying in the face of their experiences and it's like that old Hollywood line, who you're going to believe, you know, me or your lying eyes. Their eyes are not lying to them. They see the economic problems. They feel them. They see that real wages continue to fall. It's because just because inflation isn't still rising at such a rapid pace, all of those prices are baked into the cake now. It's not like prices have gone down at the supermarket. They have remained elevated, and they probably will for some time. And so that's the thing Biden is running against, and he doesn't seem to understand it. He's not working very hard. When this trial first started, he was out on the campaign trail to make a contrast. Trump in court, here I am to help you and save you. I think that ran its course in about 2 hours, because still what people live in is what they experience in their daily
Michael,
lives,
the other
not
thing
what
is,
the media tells them.
15 of the 17, in 17 minutes, he lied 15 times. And some big, some really small, like saying that I walked into 9% inflation, which is you couldn't be more. That's the type of stuff he does on the debates, too. Just says stuff that are not moored into reality. I hope Trump understands that when they do debate, when he says this, to let it all come out, jot it down and knock it out of the park. But don't interrupt and give the moderator a chance to play a role and gloss over it. That's what happened last time, as we all know, in the one debate. I just want to play it again because I watch Fareed Zakaria every day. I mean, every Sunday. I want to get a perspective on what's going on in the rest of the world, but I just also factor in that he's vehemently anti-Trump. Listen to this, him talk about what Joe Biden is like on the stand. Cut 41.
Trump could always embroil himself in some kind of scandal. But trend lines are not working in Biden's favor. He needs to do something bold and dramatic to seize the initiative. The one that troubles me the most is on the question of who was the more competent. Joe Biden led Donald Trump by 9 points in 2020, but Trump now leads by 16 points in January 2024. That 25-point shift could be a reflection of people's sense that the president's age is affecting his capacity to govern. And there's very little that Joe Biden can do now to change that perception.
Listen, you know how long we've been saying this? You know how long we've been saying this? And just to hear other stations doing this. I mean, they were mocking him in Saudi Arabia, their version of SNL. They were talking about Joe Biden not how to get off a stage. But we couldn't get anyone on CNN to even admit that inflation up until recently, that inflation was not 9% when he entered office. But now they're pushing. Now they push back in real time on the analysis. But Aaron Burnett did a really good job with him last week. But if you have the answers, you don't mind those tough questions. He was offended by the tough questions.
Yeah, I was watching that, Brian, and my first reaction was, wait, they promised me no tough questions, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing he's gotten used to and gotten away with. Look, I think we must always remember this is such an extraordinary opportunity America has to compare the two candidates, both of whom have been president. And now to have them running against each other, you have a great comparison. You have the 4 years of the Trump years, and a lot of people were happy to see him go. And some of those people now clearly are saying, oh, my God, I didn't realize Biden was going to be so bad. And so, therefore, they compare – they look at Trump's 4 years, compare it to Biden's, and they say – oh, my God, it wasn't even close. Trump was a much better president. Things were better under Trump. I mean, that's just undeniable. Yes, he creates a lot of chaos. He talks. He says things he shouldn't say. He gets into personal feuds too much. Nonetheless, on substantive matters, on the economy, on the border, on global on
trade.
The global perspective, is the world about to blow up? You had a much more stable presidency under Donald Trump than you do under Joe Biden. It's just a fact, and it is now seeping out, and the Democrats don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, and your column's about Gaza, so I want to get to that maybe later in the week as that develops. But my last thing is, you know, when Trump has, you know, complaining about crowd size, that's Trump's fault. But a lot of the stuff that created the chaos was the Russia stuff. Every single day, every time he meets with the North Korean leader, whatever, something with Russia. Don Jr. had a meeting. Such and some. Michael Cohen reached out to Vladimir Putin, but he was in Prague. You know, every day there was a different thing, and was driving him crazy. Them saying that he was going to be impeached. The Mueller report was going to come out, and it was going to prove it. His friends were being arrested. Michael Cohen's office was being raided. So if you take that out, I wonder how much crazy there was. And that's something I think we might be able to find out if things continue the way they are right now by November. Michael, if you ever want to be disciplined, put those, knowing that he's going to face those trials without the presidency to protect him and finance him, wasn't anything to get you disciplined. I think that's what he's showing now. Michael, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right. Meanwhile, Rita's column is called Biden's Jekyll and Hyde Approach to Israel is a Disaster in the Making. He expands on that. I'll expand on with you in a moment. And then Dr. Ben Carson, the bottom of the hour, also have the latest from inside. We have somebody on the inside taking it all down. Don't move. Of the court.
It's case. Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, well, one went along with Michael Cohen, but we're getting Michael Goodwin, but we're getting new information on Michael Cohen. First off, they're trying to say, well, did you like working there? He said, I love working for Donald Trump for 10 years. He's on the stand right now. They said, did you lie for him? He goes, yes, I admit I lied for Donald Trump in order to protect him and to push him forward. He said he set up Should Donald Trump Run website. So they were, again, I guess they're trying to establish that this whole idea started with Michael Cohen about him running for president. They're trying to start that this is what he did. He would put out fires. He said that he would try to amplify good stories about Trump and kill other stories that were bad about him. So this is all stuff we know. But what the prosecution has to do, people say, is they have to get it out that he lies. That as late as 6 months ago, he was lied about a plea deal that he agreed to, again, making the judge that he agreed to it with say, this guy's just a serial liar. And all the other things. So you got to get that out during prosecution to try to take the air out of an aggressive defense. So far, they're building up very slowly. He's supposed to be on trial for 2 or 3 days. Why am I making such a big deal of this? Because if Cohen swings and misses, it's really over.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's my privilege to bring in Dr. Ben Carson, the 17th Secretary of Department of Housing and Urban Development, one of the world's best brain surgeons, author of a brand new book, The Perilous Fight, Overcoming Our Culture Wars on the American Family. Dr. Carson, welcome back. Congratulations on the book.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And I guess it comes out tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow's a big day. We're looking forward to it.
I just want to give the people at home, and I know you're watching this, and I see a lot of surrogates behind Donald Trump today, and I know you guys have Mutual Respect Society. Senator Tommy Tuberville is there. Eric Trump is there. J.D. Vance is there. I think that they're going to start coming on a regular basis to let everybody know, because he does have such support now in the Republican Party. Can you describe how that has grown?
Oh, it's been massive, because I think a lot of people are realizing that the alternative is destruction of the future of this country for their children, for their grandchildren, and all the people who are coming after us. You don't have to be very smart or very observant to see the things that have happened over the last few years. And they're all intentional things. They're caused by policies. It's not accidental. You know, economists like to say, you know, there's a natural ebb and flow to the economy. It goes up and it goes down. That's not true. It goes up when you have people who understand what they're doing, and it goes down when you don't.
So how many other politicians could have got 80 to 100,000 people in Wildwood, New Jersey on a Saturday night that was probably about 40 degrees?
That's phenomenal. It shows you the thirst that the American people have for some common sense. That's all they want, just a little bit of common sense. It makes no sense to have open borders and have all kind of people coming in here and destroying, you know, the electoral process, because we choose the number of representatives based on the population in the area. So that's destroying the natural consequences there of having all this tax and regulation, which slows down the economy tremendously, of having energy policies that are destructive when we had an abundance of energy. And we can use that in a very effective way to move ourselves to green renewable energy. I mean, there are just so many things that a person with a normal intellect could figure out that's not going on.
Yes, and I'm one of those normal people. Lawrence Taylor is another one. He's got his athletic prowess goes beyond description. He showed up in Wildwood, you know, is a giant legend. This is what he said. Cut 38.
I just want to say I grew up a Democrat, and I've always been a Democrat until I met this man right here. I'll tell you what. He will not have to worry about nobody in my family ever vote for a Democrat again.
So obviously, Lawrence Taylor, African-American. We understand the president is gaining with African-American men. O.J. Anderson was by Lawrence's side, the outstanding running back from the Cardinals when they were in St. Louis and from the Giants. Cut 39.
So my word is Wildwood. Are you in the house? I can't hear you. Wildwood, are you in the house? Thank you guys for all your support. And how about a great shout out for Metro Exhibit, baby? We made it all happen. All because of you. Thank you.
Said the same similar things. What's happened in the black community? Dr. Carson, you were once, you and Tim Scott and people like that were once an anomaly. Is it changing?
Well, I was also once a Democrat. And but that was back in the days when they were reasonable, when they had values and principles, and it wasn't just ideology that drove them. And I think a lot of people are starting to understand that, you know, the party is not as important as the philosophy behind it. And I think the reason that many minorities are being drawn to Trump is because what you see is what you get. I mean, he's an open book. You don't have to worry about what he's saying and what his policies are and where they're leading. And we've already seen side by side, you know, one philosophical group versus another and where it leads and how it makes you feel, how it makes your family feel, how you feel about the future. So in a way, it's a blessing that this happened because we may have just slowly drifted into socialism and a Marxist state. And I think now we see the tremendous contrast. And I think that may bode well for us in the future.
I want you to hear what Joe Manchin told me Saturday night. He feels like you do, only from the other side. Cup 43.
I'm not a Washington Democrat, okay? So when you say my party, I don't relate to any of this. And I have a lot of friends who aren't Washington Republicans. The parties have gone so extreme, Brian, and somehow we've got to bring the grand old party, make it grand again, and make the Democrat Party responsible again. And I think they both lost their ways, and they're just listening to their own chatter here in Washington. But none of this makes sense. We don't live our lives like this. You know, I can tell you in West Virginia, none of this would make sense to them whatsoever. They're going to protect their families. They know what's best. They want input with their families, and they should have it.
So I wish there were more people like that, but the two people that made sense on the Democratic Party, although frustrating to some on the right, Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema, they're done. They want no part of this.
Yeah, unfortunately, the extreme component has taken over. And one of the things I talk about in the book is, you know, the United States stands in the way of one world government and of Marxist domination. And they can't bring us down with weapons. The only way they can bring us down is from the inside, attacking the families, attacking our faith, and the building blocks that made us into an incredible nation. And they're making us into enemies by driving wedges between us on the basis of race, age, income, gender, religion, political affiliation, you name it. And I have an acrostic. It's called WANE, W-A-N-E. We are not enemies. And we have to recognize that we are friends and neighbors and colleagues and coworkers, not enemies, just because we have a different yard sign. And we're being manipulated into believing that we are enemies, which is the only way to bring our nation down.
You know, it's amazing, too. I mean, President Biden doesn't help with his rich people are not paying any taxes, and I'm going to be the union representative and working class can't get it, and just making it rich against the poor doesn't help. But now you have a situation where you're the people are citing that there's outside sources looking at America and what divides us, and fomenting all of that, whether it's the Palestinian-Israeli situation, whether it's blacks against whites, Asians against blacks, because when it comes to school. So yes, there are people who are waiting for the next George Floyd incident. They're waiting for the next Palestinian incident, and they're going to be playing both sides through social media, correct?
That's exactly right. And we have got to get people to realize what we're up against, who our real enemies are, And all of that is demonstrated very well in this book, including, you know, the 45 Goals of Communism in America that was written into the Congressional Record in 1963. So we're not talking about something that's of recent origin. These seeds have been planted for a long time. They're germinating now, and they're having an effect. We cannot win unless we know who the enemy is, what we're up against, and how we must fight them.
Very interesting. So, Dr. Carson, in retrospect, now that you had a chance, you were one of the few to serve from day one to the last day. What did you learn about government that you didn't learn when you were in brain surgery all those years and meeting with higher-ups and making your own think tanks in your house? You used to invite people over from all different walks of life and talk about the issues that matter most. But then when you finally got into government, let alone HUD specifically, what did you discover?
Well, I discovered that it's not a swamp. It's a cesspool. That's worse than a swamp. And it does desperately need to be fixed. The system that was put together by our founders was a very good system. But they put it together after studying all the other systems that ever existed in the history of the world, which told them that governments have a tendency to grow, to infiltrate, and to dominate. And they wanted to give us a constitution that would prevent that from happening. And it's worked for a long time. You know, Benjamin Franklin, when he came out of that building after the Constitutional Convention in 1787, was asked, what do we have, a monarchy or a republic? He said, a republic, if you can keep it. We've kept it for 247 years. We're as close to losing it right now as we ever have been. And the only way we save it is that people have to get involved. You can't expect somebody else to take care of it. Everybody has a sphere of influence. You need to vote the right way. You need to know who you're voting for. You need to talk to the people in your sphere of influence. You need to have discussions with people instead of standing in the corner and staring at your shoes and hoping no one calls you a nasty name. You can't be the land of the free if you're not the home of the brave.
And that's what's out in this book called The Perilous Fight, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family. So tell me what a second Trump presidency would look like.
Oh, I think it's going to look a whole lot like the first. It's going to be a little more difficult because we're deeper in the hole. But, you know, getting rid of all of these regulations, they've piled them on during the current administration. That's what really frees up the economy. That's what gives entrepreneurs license to do what they do best. And that will create high-paying jobs. That's what it's going to look like. It's going to look like a place that does things that make sense, like close the border, have a remain in Mexico policy, utilize our natural resources, particularly our oil and gas, and in a way that will benefit the economy and benefit the average person, have policies regarding China that benefit American workers first. All of those things just make common sense, and that's what you'll see once again.
I think so. Just real quick, your take on what's happening on these college campuses?
We're reaping the unfortunate consequences of having neglected our children and leaving their education and their values to others. Those things normally come from the family, but we have so few traditional nuclear families anymore that we're not getting our values through. And I talk about that in the book. This is something that is rectifiable, but we need to start very soon, because if we don't, we got a major problem on our hands.
Would you go back if President Trump asked you?
I will continue to work extremely hard to save our nation, either inside or outside of government.
All right. Dr. Carson, thanks so much. Go out and pick up his book, The Perilous Fight. It's heavily researched, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family. And can I just put this in brackets? What people on the outside are trying to do to America. Dr. Carson, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. It's always good.
You got it. Hey, we come back. What happened over the weekend at college campuses? What happened at Emerson? What happened at Duke? What did Sacramento State do that I find abhorrent? I'll answer all those questions when we come back. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Again, a lot of you are thinking, I can't believe they invited this guy. Too late. I say, use your privilege. I grew up a Jewish boy from New York. That is a privilege if you want to be a comedian. Thanks. Whatever you're doing, I don't care if it's your job, your hobby, a relationship, getting a reservation at M Sushi, make an effort. Just pure, stupid, no real idea what I'm doing here, effort. Effort always yields a positive value, even if the outcome of the effort is absolute failure of the desired result. This is a rule of life. Just swing the bat and pray is not a bad approach to a lot of things.
It's great advice because he works out every day. The one thing I heard, he gets up every day and writes. So a lot of comedians get up at noon. They go to a coffee shop. They think about their going up at about 8 o'clock at night. They go and meet somebody else, and they go work out for a while. This guy is always part of a structure, and that's why it's part of a system and part of a job. That's where he gets the swagger and the success. But you just got to make an effort. And unfortunately, a lot of people in college right now don't understand that. They need an effort, and you need resilience. Either one happens. But what happened with Seinfeld is dozens of people got up and left the minute he started speaking at Duke. And you could see it. They say a dozen. It's much more than that. And after a while, they started chanting, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. And he stuck around. But why would anyone? Governor Glenn Youngkin goes and speaks at, he was speaking to VCU. And students got up and walked out of Governor Youngkin's commencement address. So here you are, you go through 4 years, maybe more, go through 2 years, whether it's graduate school. You got the governor there, popular governor, certainly be running for president in the future, already a major success. I don't care if it's the biggest liberal or Steve Jobs or whatever. They booked him. You listen to him. This is the school you picked. But you get up and walk out. You think that Glenn Youngkin cares that you're pro-Palestinian? You think you did anything? Maybe your parents drove all the way down. They go see what happened with all their money, how much money they might have spent if you're out of state. And then you get up and walk out because of the Palestinians in Gaza, a place you didn't even know existed because you're a fine arts major and you focus on sculpting. So you're gone. What else happened? At Emerson College, this is unbelievable. Look at this. 1,000 students entered into a procession. One out of every five had their fist raised in some kind of pro-Palestinian paraphernalia accompanying their caps, a decorated mortarboard with a Palestinian flag, and in one case, a Palestinian flag worn as a cape. Almost immediately after the journalism professor Michael Brown began to speak to start the ceremony, several students began shouting pro-Palestinian slogans, which were met with loud boos. Of course, idiots. One woman arrived on the stage with no robe on, wearing all white, covered in red writing about the war in Gaza. She threw a diploma across the stage and held up her hands covered in red paint before exiting. Another draped a flag over the main podium at the center of the stage, which was prompt to remove. Imagine that. Now, maybe your parents are on board with this. Can you imagine if they're not? You get your grandmother, your uncles come in. Maybe you're the first one to graduate, and you look up on the stage, and there's your daughter. No cape on, red in her hands, screaming for the Palestinians, who you probably didn't even know where existed or where Gaza is. I love this, too. Queers for Palestine, a group that I can't get in for a series of reasons, decided to stop the traffic exiting Disney, infuriating drivers. But in Florida, they have cops that are allowed to do their job. So in 11 minutes, they were cleared out. So anti-Israeli protesters, they don't want to say anti-Semitic, but we know they are. They're in their kippah-clad crew, tried to block it. Everyone started screaming at him. One protester held banners across the ramp, chanted, free, free Palestine. You think you're going to win anyone over with that? Do you think that anyone, well, you know what, honey? You're right. The Palestinians, led by Hamas, who killed 2,200 innocent people in the most horrific way imaginable and took 230 hostage from 8 months to 80, I'm really starting to see their side now because I couldn't leave Disney for an extra 45 minutes or my commencement address on my kid was interrupted by a bunch of losers. They have no idea the situation. Should be embarrassed, embarrassed. And now people have to explain, yeah, I went to VCU, but I didn't walk out on Glenn Youngkin. Unbelievably disrespectful.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hello, everyone. Hope you had a fantastic Mother's Day. Sure did apply. Overall, a great weekend. We're back in action today. The thing that sticks out about over the weekend, just, and I think it's remarkable and not surprising, that it's not widely reported that a presidential candidate had 80 to 100,000 people in Wildwood, New Jersey on a cold day on a Saturday afternoon announced 3 days prior. And that's not big news. Do you remember when candidate and Senator Barack Obama went to Berlin and had a big crowd? I'm not saying Wildwood is Berlin, but that the word was this charismatic guy who's just beat Hillary Clinton shows up in Berlin and everyone was curious to see him. That's a lot different than a president that's been impeached two times, is on trial right now, going head to head with a sitting president that decides to run again, that shows up in a rally and 80 to 100,000 people show up in a state that he lost by 15 points. Now, I know Pennsylvania is close and I know a lot came from Pennsylvania and New York, but that is a story. But if you look everywhere, you do not see it being covered, honestly, even though things have gotten a little better for Trump in the press, but marginally better. But when they talk about it, I love this. Donald Trump on Wildwood, New Jersey, the headline is Trump's jabs Manhattan prosecutor in profane speech at rally. Oh, really? Do you think you missed the headline? One line, he called him Fat Alvin. He is Fat Alvin. I mean, he's a fat guy, and he should not have taken this to court. Trump is angry. He comes up with this stuff. With me right now is Brooke Singman, who knows the Trump and Trump camp as well as anyone. She's been following this on Fox News Digital and on television. She's a political reporter, also following this court case with now it looks like Michael Cohen's been on for about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Brooke, how do you? It's great to see you, by
great
the way.
Great to see you.
I know you were covering Senator Menendez early, but just looking at Trump and the trial, as we're getting it from our reporters, what do you think's emerged so far?
I mean, Michael Cohen's been on the stand for, like you just said, a little over an hour now. And what he's been doing is really laying the groundwork. He's giving his background. He actually testified that he had the most fantastic experience working for Trump for 10 years at the Trump Organization. He said he loved working with Trump. He spoke with him every day multiple times, either walking into his office, called him boss, called him Mr. Trump. They were very close. And he is just really setting the stage for, you know, I guess he's going to try to claim that Trump directed him to make these hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. But as he's testifying right now on the stand and speaking to prosecutors, he is not really, he hasn't exactly made that case yet. The only thing he said so far that I could imagine prosecutors running with at this point is Cohen testified that Trump told him to, quote unquote, handle it about any negative stories about him coming out in the press. But Cohen also testified that was his thing. That's what he wanted to do for the campaign.
Fix it.
And he said it was fair. He told Prosecutor Susan Hoffinger this morning that it was a, quote unquote, fair description of him to call him his fixer, but not because Trump always directed him to do so. It's because he wanted to. He
right.
said he was never on the 2016 campaign. He wanted to be a surrogate. He wanted to go on into the press and put out positive messages about Trump and squash any kind of negative stories about Trump, which, of course, he's testifying to right now regarding, you know, that I guess they're calling it the alleged catch and kill scheme with American Media Inc. National Enquirer. But that's what Cohen wanted to do. He said
when asked about the McDougal story, he said David Pecker wanted $150,000 and he said, OK, fine, I'll take care of it. Now, the question would be, OK, what does that mean?
Right.
I'll take care of him. Am I going to reimburse you? Did he come out and say you're going to reimburse you?
Hasn't gotten to that yet at all.
Right.
All you know what? Trump and Cohen said that he and Trump met with David Pecker, the ex-CEO of National Enquirer, American Media Inc., in 2015, right after Trump announced his run. But Cohen, yes, he's talking about, you know, these negative stories about Trump, but he also testified this morning that he had a relationship with David Pecker before Trump announced
Did
that he was
that.
Running.
Wow.
You know what he said? He worked with David Pecker on a positive story because Trump wanted it. It had nothing really to do with Trump. It was about this charity organization before Trump announced he was running for president. Cohen reached out to David Pecker saying there's a charity organization that Trump donated to. He's bummed because the organization is great. I think it was called Harlem for Hoops. Trump was donating a lot of money, and he found out that the organization didn't have much funding. So Cohen worked with David Pecker, he testified to this today, to get a positive story about that organization into, you know, the headlines. Which
yeah, he said he admitted he would lie for Trump, but he said three or four times a week they would talk. Back and forth, he says, my goal was to kill bad stories and amplify good stories. He said that it was very exciting working for Trump in the past, but soon they're going to get to the negative side. And this is what he told me to do. He's probably going to say, at some point, I thought it was wrong or I lost his moorings about it. But keep in mind, what is he charged with? Election interference, killing stories that would have affected the 2016 election. Which fundamentally, I thought the Russians won the 2016 election. I thought, you know, they want to give it. I thought, beside the Access Hollywood story, if they didn't destroy it, to think that Stormy Daniels was going to change anything is insanity. And that's why people like Fareed Zakaria are saying this. Cut one.
The trials against him keep him in the spotlight, infuriate his base, who sees him as a martyr, and even may serve to make him the object of some sympathy among people in general who believe that his prosecutors are politically motivated. This happens to be true, in my opinion. I doubt the New York indictment would have been brought against a defendant whose name was not Donald Trump.
You have to understand what this is like. This is almost akin in the commentating world of Liz Cheney or Michael Moore saying that.
Yeah.
Somebody who's vehemently anti-Trump, but you say, listen, and then he went on to talk about the chances of Trump winning, which is really, really good. Do you notice also, Brooke, that the New York Times editor was in an interview recently, and he said, I told the Biden administration, they wrote an editorial too, that it's not my job to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't win the election
right, to
save democracy. It is Joe Biden's job.
Right.
Now, we know that, and we know what's going on. But to have the editor of the New York Times say it is nuts.
It's good. It's good
that
it's great for the American people to have the editor of the New York Times saying it's not our responsibility to prevent Donald Trump's election or to promote Biden's. It is each campaign. Biden wants Trump to be only seen in a courtroom or walking out of a courtroom or, you know, being threatened with jail time for violating a pretty unfair gag order, really, according to the Trump campaign. But the president right now needs to be being the president of the United States. And it can't be up to the media to do his bidding for him. And of course, you know, Joe Biden, what did he do this weekend? Was he in Delaware this weekend at his beach house?
Yeah, I think he did nothing. And I think he went to San Francisco, earned some money, and he had a disastrous speech on Wednesday where he said inflation was not his fault. He sat down with Aaron Burnett of CNN. He wanted to amplify a story of his. He wanted to amplify and make the announcement about withholding aid to Israel, which ticked off is a lot of people on the left, and 23 Democrats in the House voted to restore that aid to Israel, let alone every Republican.
And didn't the Biden campaign also take the opportunity to use Mother's Day as a way to attack Trump and say that, you know, Trump is a threat to women everywhere because of his stance on abortion, even though he said he would never sign a national abortion ban? Anyway, about what you mentioned before, having Trump in Wildwood, New Jersey, I mean, to have 100,000 people at a New Jersey rally, a blue state, Trump, who's a Republican, you know, it was really stunning to see. But it goes to show that maybe this, this being in court, even though he's not technically on the campaign trail, it's definitely energizing his base, right?
Right. And the whole thing is, too, the Stormy Daniels thing is ugly. And the stuff that may not have hurt him, hurt the case, you would think of a fair-minded jury. And we don't know how fair they are. You always worry about suburban women reading the story about Stormy Daniels, the timing of their alleged relationship, and wondering if you're losing them, or do people say, that's Trump,
well,
we get it.
The thing with that is suburban women have been hearing about the Stormy Daniels story since 2018, so this is not new for them to be hearing. But I will say, I mean, we've seen polls coming out today, Trump leading in at least, what is it, 5 battleground states at this point. So, you know, clearly the trial is not affecting the polls right now. We'll see what happens. And about the jury and whether or not they're fair, what I'm worried about is that the jury may not, based on the way that the case has been presented, does the jury know what question they are answering here? I mean, as a juror, because this is such a complicated case, I would wonder, okay, am I trying to prove that there was an affair?
Yeah.
No, that's not the charge. Am I trying to prove that he made a hush money payment? Well, that's not the charge either. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how Cohen does today to make the prosecution's case, because, you know, they've described him as a star witness. What they need to prove is that Trump defrauded with intent or falsified business records. And
right.
So far, I don't know. And does the jury know that that's really what they're supposed to be answering? Because even, you know, Trump attorneys last week said a lot of the testimony that they've heard from Stormy Daniels and others is prejudicial, and it's confusing, and it distracts from the actual charged conduct. So we'll see what Cohen does to clear that up for the prosecution, or, you know, what comes next.
Right. So, and it's going to be the jury instructions at the end, everyone say, is going to be key. I have no faith in this judge. The fact that he went and did a photo shoot before. Everybody yeah. says that if you really want a conviction, recuse yourself if it's not about you. You know about your wife's a Democratic donor. You know your daughter's a Democratic consultant working with, of all people, Adam Schiff. You understand the confliction when you personally donate to Joe Biden's campaign. If you really wanted a fair trial, you would have kicked yourself out of this. If you care more about justice or you just want to be famous, this political ad you're referring to. So here's us on Mother's Day. This is what the Biden team puts out. Donald Trump wants to separate mothers from their children, allow laws that rip away IVF access, and monitor women's pregnancies. This Mother's Day, do the moms in your life a favor. Stop Trump. Okay, let's look at this. Number one, you really want to put that out on Mother's Day? Especially, do you want to put out the fact that 82,000 unaccompanied minors, we don't know where they are in the United States? And whatever you think of that policy, it was put out there to prevent people from coming across the border and putting their family in unsafe situations. And it was ended in 10 days, if not less. Obama was the one who put them in cages. The IVF thing was something in Alabama, which has since been voted down and reversed. Never part of Trump policies. Trump came back with a very good response. It said this. What a sad, miserable, cowardly existence crooked Joe Biden and the campaign must have to make such a disgusting ad on such a joyous day. Their lives are obviously filled with anger, hate, and resentment because they clearly suffer from Trump derangement syndrome. President Trump continues to live rent-free in their pea-sized brains, even on Mother's Day. So they almost were above it until the
right,
until the last
line. Pea-sized brain. But, you know, I mean, it's true. Trump came out with his stance on abortion, and he said that his campaign and he supports, you know, access to IVF, access to contraception. He does not support a national abortion ban. He supports the decision going to the states, yeah. which is what the Supreme Court ruled. That is not a Trump policy. That is what the highest court in the land overturned Roe versus Wade mm-hmm. and returned that decision to the states, rather. So, I mean, Trump is just staying in line with the Supreme Court ruling there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is politics.
Hey, Bill, by the way, Cohen could go 3 days. There's one more witness after that. Then defense could be short. They want to bring up some other people about Michael Cohen, his former attorney, that has a lot of things to say. They wonder if they should do it or if they feel like they won and they're just going to tighten some things up and get to closing arguments, which could mean before Memorial Day, we could know. And then the jury, I don't know, takes it home with them, and then we get a verdict after.
And will he testify? Will Trump
There's
get on
no
the
way.
Stand? I mean, he said he wanted to, but, yeah. and I remember he said it was at Mar-a-Lago. I was at Mar-a-Lago. He did a press conference with Speaker Johnson, and somebody asked if he'd testify, and he said, yeah, because he tells the truth. So, you know, we'll see if he does. And I actually wonder, Brian, do you know, he has this gag order imposed upon him. He's not allowed to talk about witnesses or court staff. If he's on the stand, is he allowed to talk about witnesses or is he gagged from that on the stand?
I'm sure he has to get answered.
Right.
It'll be the biggest mistake of his life.
Yeah.
He'd be crazy to do it.
We'll see.
Come on, Brooke.
I don't know. There is no way he's going to do it. We'll see.
Brooke Singman, Fox News digital political reporter all over the Trump campaign, the trial, and Senator Menendez, who seems pretty damn guilty, if you ask me. Daniel Lippman, bottom of the hour, political reporter. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. More on the latest moments of Michael Cohen's day one testimony. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So if you like Biden on the Israel-Gaza war, look at that. He's getting 87% of the vote. RFK Jr. is getting 8. Donald Trump way down here at 4. But if you dislike Biden, If you disapprove of the job he's doing on the Israel-Gaza war, look at this. He's getting just 50% of that vote. My goodness gracious. These are people who voted for him last time. RFK Jr. is getting 20%. This is just a 30-point margin compared to a 79-point margin among those who approve of Biden on the Israel-Gaza war. This is a huge dividing line within the Democratic Party, and that's something, of course, we're seeing right now between the progressive wing and those more centrist or mainstream Democrats.
Yeah, and that is Harry Enten. He's a CNN political data reporter, probably not enjoying that report, but the numbers don't lie. That's why Fareed Zakaria said what he did, and that's why David Axelrod on Thursday said what he did. And when it comes to aid to Israel, forget about politics. I'm incensed by it personally. I know there's good and bad in it. I was also stunned that should not be, I know. This week with George Stephanopoulos, host Martha Raddatz, Kristen Welker, as well as Margaret Brennan, all are firmly for the Palestinians. And you hear it in their questions, but they weren't ready to handle Tom Cotton. Listen to this exchange on Face the Nation, cut 27.
You know that past presidents have withheld military aid to Israel to force changes in behavior. President Reagan did that. President Bush did that. Why do you have a problem with President Biden doing it?
Well, Ronald Reagan's decision to pause the delivery of fighter jets in the 1980s was totally different from what's happened here. Israel is fighting a war of survival against a terrorist group that committed the worst atrocity against Jews since World War II. In the 1980s, an Israeli ambassador had been targeted for assassination. Ronald Reagan knew that the pause of fighter jets would not interfere with Israel's fighting because they had plenty of fighters. He did not pause munitions. Joe Biden is not sending munitions in the middle of a shooting war that's a war of survival.
Oops. That Reagan line worked on other channels, not with Tom Cotton. He said more. Cut 26. Listen to this.
It was in the Washington Post with four officials familiar with it. The Washington Post is like the message board for this administration and the Democratic Party.
You believe that the intelligence community is withholding information?
I believe that Joe Biden is willing to do that. I mean, he's imposed.
Do you have any evidence?
He's imposed a de facto arms embargo on Israel and sanctions on Israelis.
So Tom Cotton cites the Washington Post. Four sources say that they said, if you don't go into Rafah, Netanyahu, we'll give you intelligence on where Sinwar is, which indicates that we have intelligence and are not sharing with them. Are you insane? Are we supposed we pro Hamas or something? Can you imagine if France decide, well, yeah, we know where Bin Laden is, and if you promise not to blow up anything, I'll tell you exactly where he is. Is that the way allies act? So right away, Margaret Brennan goes, oh, you don't think that. Well, what do you want him to do? It's in Washington Post that you guys consider the Bible when it comes to the Russian hoax. There's not one line that was printed there that you didn't think was gospel. Now they print it again, and you're like, well, I don't believe that. You don't believe that because John Kirby denied it? A lot of things John Kirby denied. For example, that they're withholding weapon systems from Israel. You know what happened? That was a private conversation which the Israelis let out. Now all of a sudden John Kirby denied it knowing it's the truth. And now it comes out that it's true. They said, well, this is just one shipment. They have plenty of stuff. Well, the one shipment of the bombs to get to the tunnels where the hostages are and where Hamas is. We'll bring you the latest on the trial when we come back. Daniel Lipman on the impact of the impact on the overall race and why Trump is doing so much better than Republican senators in these battleground states. Really a mystery. Brian Kilmeade Show, so glad you're here.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
As you can see today, we're expanding the electoral map because we are going to officially play in the state of New Jersey. We're going to win the state of New Jersey. Got a great group of people with us, an incredible group of people. We're also looking really great in the state of Minnesota, which hasn't been one since 1952, and we're leading in the polls, and the state of Virginia, and actually many other states. I don't know, could be all of them. This guy's so damn bad, it could be all of them.
And that is a very happy former President Donald Trump in front of between 80 and 100,000 people in Wildwood, New Jersey over the weekend. And he was going after the court cases, but he stayed away from anything would be a violation of the a gag order that's out there. Michael Cohen testifying right now. They're taking a short break, and they're analyzing basically what he said. They also just played a clip from the trial, a clip at the trial, at which time they said that Donald Trump was going back and forth with Michael Cohen, one of which was saying that we talked to our friend David. David is handling basically the problem we have, and he asked for $150,000, and he said, okay, I'll handle it. And then we don't know what that means by I'll handle it. And that's what the defense is going to have to say. Michael Cohen also testified that Alan Weisenberg knew every dollar that came through the company, and they were talking about buying Karen McDougal's story. That's if the transcript that's been leaking, that's been coming out of the courtroom, is all correct. Daniel Lippman is a political reporter covering the White House in Washington. And Daniel, if covering the White House beat has to include this New York courtroom, right?
It does. And so I'm keeping a close eye on this trial and seeing what the jurors think of his credibility, given that he is a convicted liar, but also is the prosecution's star witness. And so if they do believe him if the prosecution is basically able to say, hey, this guy was only trying to lie for Donald Trump and now is telling the truth, then Trump may have a problem on his hands.
Right. But in what way? So, for example, let's say that he took wrote a check out of his personal account to reimburse Michael Cohen for spiking a story, for killing a story with David Pecker. That could be a campaign violation, like Hillary Clinton did with the whole dossier, cost her $450,000. What would be the complication there?
I think the complication is it was right before the election in 2016. And so they had a strong incentive to keep this private. And even Stormy Daniels' lawyer had said to Michael Cohen's or the Inquirer's lawyer, hey, if this goes past the election, then, then this story is worthless, because if he loses the election, as everyone thought, then she would not be able to, be able to get as much money out of Trump as she wanted. And so I think that the prosecution is hoping that Cohen is more of a cooperative witness than Stormy Daniels, who was talking faster than they could interrupt her. And the judge couldn't stop her from revealing stuff about the actual, sexual relations at that point.
Oh, he could have. You could have stopped her if they wanted to, and he's trying to figure out why he should. But the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that there were three stories. They talk about McDougal, they talk about Stormy Daniels, and they talk about a doorman who said he had a story about a kid that's out of wedlock. Now, one of the stories everybody agrees was false. They disagreement on the other two. So that story needed to be spiked, too. A false story coming out about a candidate for president that ended up being false, well, whether it ends up being true, but this one ended up being false. Of course you would spike that. If you had a negative business story about you, there was going to be a major meeting, a union was going to call a major press conference, say Donald Trump doesn't pay his bills. And if he says, hey, you know what, guys, if you don't call that press conference, I'll be able to give you this amount of money. Isn't that the NDAs that happen all the time?
They do happen all the time. Most candidates are not, they don't have as messy of a personal life like Donald Trump. I don't think Joe Biden was paying off people left and right during his last, couple runs for office. And so, and I think that they're trying to focus this on the business records part, where it's, if you're going to pay someone off, it has to not be trying to cover up another crime. And so, classify it properly in the business records. Don't classify it as just a legal expense when Michael Cohen was the pass through. It was not for Michael Cohen's legal services. He was only the kind of the middleman. And so if you want, I think they try to have good business records for multiple reasons. If there's an IRS tax audit, you want to make sure that these are the right books.
Wow. I mean, so you're really going to, it comes down to, as Jonathan Turley said, if you follow your lawyer's advice and that lawyer testifies against you that you should never have followed my advice, is that a crime?
Well, that's a great point. You got to select good lawyers. And Michael Cohen was trying to almost be like a Roy Cohn type person. And Trump had a relationship with Roy Cohn. He admired him. He wanted someone who was a brawler, and he got that with Cohen. But now Cohen, he is kind of, in Democrats' eyes, seen the light and wants to have some revenge against Donald Trump.
And Daniel, I think as you reported, it was, I think it was 6 months ago when after he came out and said the plea that he agreed to, he no longer said was telling the truth, which prompted the judge to say that he's a serial liar. Because 6 months ago, he agreed to a plea agreement. One was, I guess, house arrest and less time in jail. And then he said, yeah, well, I never did that. I agreed to it, but that's not the way it happened. So all that stuff's going to come out. But as you look at this whole case, can you believe a presidential candidate who happens to be leading in the polls might be tripped up by something that happened in 2016 about an incident that happened in 2009? Don't you think in many ways the opponent of Donald Trump has to decide, was it Russia that won in the election? Now it's going to be payments that Michael Cohen engineered that won in the election. Isn't this, if you take a step out of it, isn't it just a little bit of a huge leap?
Well, I think what they're trying to, you know, if you want voters to have all the information, then paying people to stay silent is not the way to do that. And so I will say that Trump had all of those, you know, he had the Access Hollywood story come out before the election. He had all of those women who were accusing him of sexual assault, and that did not hurt him. And so he's kind of a Teflon Don, and so nothing really hurts him. But if the jury says this was an illegal campaign finance violation and you were guilty of a felony, then the court of public opinion, in terms of swing voters and a good section of Republicans, I think it's like in the double digits, could be, you know, 50% of Republicans are not excited and do not want to vote for a felon for the presidency. And so that's where it comes down to. We have a jury system. It is a bedrock of our democracy. Are we going to believe the jury verdict, or are we going to say this is all false?
Well, I'll tell you what, I would love to see the 50% of Republicans that would not vote for Donald Trump because he's found guilty in this trial, especially when you have a guy like Fareed Zakaria say this, cut one.
The trials against him keep him in the spotlight, infuriate his base, who sees him as a martyr, and even may serve to make him the object of some sympathy among people in general who believe that his prosecutors are politically motivated. This happens to be true, in my opinion. I doubt the New York indictment would have been brought against a defendant whose name was not Donald Trump.
Isn't that pretty significant? Because I'm sure you watch his shows or have seen his show on Sunday. He's as vehemently anti-Trump as anyone you will see on television in a nice, discerning way, and no one doubts his intellect. For him to come out with that was pretty shocking.
No, it's definitely quite something. I was not expecting that when you were playing that clip, but I think we're not talking about the base here, because everyone knows that the base of Donald Trump, they've been fired up since he left office. They want him back. They think that he did a great job policy-wise. They're willing to look past his character. It's about the swing voters that are important, that they still are out there. I know that politics has become a game of turning out your base, but it's still important to reach people who have not been decided. And so I think if there is a conviction, then it makes it harder to say this is a political persecution, because mm-hmm. then we're going to just say that those 12 jurors are not smart, that they just gave in to whatever Alvin Bragg said.
So let's talk about these Siena polls, New York Times polls. Trump has got to be pleased. He's up by 7 in Arizona. In Michigan, he's up by 7. In Nevada, he's up by 11, I think. My math's not great. Pennsylvania is up 5. Wisconsin, he's down 2. First off, your reaction to that at this point?
These are not good polls for Biden. And that we hear from the Biden White House and the campaign is mostly, oh, things are going great. We're ahead in the money. We're don't believe the polls. Whenever a politician says don't believe the polls, you know that they believe the polls and are very concerned. And so I think that they are hoping that they're able to turn these numbers around if there is a conviction. And also once they plow all that money that they have raised and are raising against Donald Trump, and they are trying to say, if you look at the ground game of turning people out, that they're way ahead of Republicans, that Republicans were closing offices in the swing states and they are opening them.
Yeah. Is that true, by the way?
It is true. Like they were, there is money issues that Trump is trying to address by getting all those, you know, big oil and gas donors and other big business people to donate. But Democrats have an advantage in the money department, and they have more organization on the ground. And so whether that matters in the end, or is it just is it a matter of enthusiasm, is an open question.
So what's the going theory on this? So I told you about former president being up in Nevada, but Jackie Rosen is up too over Brown in Nevada. In Arizona, I told you how well he's doing, but Lake is trailing Gallego by 4. That's the Democrat who's going to be running instead of for Sinema seat. And then you have in Pennsylvania, McCormick is trailing Casey by 5. In Wisconsin, the Republican is down by 9. So how do you assess the fact that the Senate doesn't mean that all these are holding seats for Democrats, but Republicans hope to get some of them? Why do you think their candidates are struggling where Trump isn't at this point?
Well, it is not easy sometimes to be a Republican elected official in the age of Trump, where you get so many questions from voters and from the media. Do you agree with Trump on XYZ? What do you think of Trump? How loyal to Trump are you? I think that these polls also show that voters sometimes ticket split. And so they may like Trump better, more than Biden in Arizona, but they like Ruben Gallego, who's been a congressman for a number of years as a veteran, versus Carrie Lake, who's a former local news anchor. And so with Sam Brown, not very tested politician, and they like Jackie Rosen. So it's almost like people say, oh, I hate Congress. It's doing a terrible job. I like my local congressman.
And just go back to the president. I just want to bounce this off. You know, Mark Penn, the Harvard Harris poll chairman, Stagwell Inc. Executive. I think he's a founder there, and former Clinton advisor, New York Times. He writes this in editorial. I spent decades looking at the behavior of swing voters and how candidates appeal to them, including Bill Clinton's reelection in 96. If Biden wants to serve another 4 years, he has to stop being dragged to the left and chart a different course closer to the center that appeals to those voters who favor bipartisan compromise in our core issues, fiscal discipline and strong America. That is not where he's tending, and there's no primary to force him there. Do you agree with his assessment?
What Biden has to do is do both, and that's a tricky tight walk. He has lost a big portion of his base over Gaza, and they're just not enthusiastic young people. He needs to be winning 60% of young people. Now he's in kind of the low 50s. Right now he needs to get those union voters, those strong liberals, to be working for his campaign tirelessly. He has not been able to do that, so he hopes for a ceasefire. And he thinks that he has been a big moderate, and that a lot of the stuff he's passed is bipartisan, like infrastructure and the CHIPS Act and some of the Build Back Better stuff. And so he has to sell to people, hey, we have a better economy than you think. Look at the stock market, for example.
So lastly, Dan, just your reflection, because you cover this so much day to day. What do people think in Democrats when they have to get Julia Roberts, George Clooney, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, all these big time celebrities, Bruce Springsteen, if they need him? And I don't think they'd get 80,000. I don't think they get 80,000 on a Saturday night at 4 o'clock in 30-degree weather or 40-degree weather in the windy beach. So without any star power, with just a president who's been impeached twice, what do they say is going on? Like, how do they rationalize what's happening?
I think they rationalize by saying that Biden is a pretty weak communicator, that he is not the same guy as 20 years ago in terms of delivering a strong speech where you can galvanize your base. This is not Barack Obama we're talking about. And so I think a lot of Democrats expected Biden to only serve one term. They thought that Harris would be a much stronger politician and that she would take the mantle. For a variety of reasons, that has not worked out. And you also have Joe Biden. Turns out, if you really like the presidency and you think that you've done a great job, you don't want to give it up unless you're in the hospital, and so far he's not.
And Trump's 80,000, what do you think?
Well, Trump has always been able to draw crowds. And so I think that, you know, in New Jersey, I don't think he's going to win New Jersey. And Minnesota is going to be a tough uphill climb. Virginia is still pretty Democratic. And so I think he may be reaching with those comments.
Yeah, he's still hoping. Daniel Lipman, always great. Political reporter covering the White House in Washington. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, guys, back in a moment to wrap up this hour. I'll have the latest court rule. The court, they're back in session. I'll tell you what's happening. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So right now I'm watching, and I think this is going to be a daily thing for the next few weeks, Senator J.D. Vance and Senator Tommy Tuberville and later Nicole Malliotakis talking at the break after the morning testimony. I think they have a short break and they'll be back there in the afternoon. There'll be no courtroom on Friday, and they're just talking about what they see and the observations they got. Michael Cohen's out there talking about Alan Weisenberg knowing all about this, that every dollar that went through, the CFO knows about. He's the CFO, 74 years old, that they put in Rikers Island. You can go punch out Stephen Buscemi, and we can't find you, but we can go get Alan Weisenberg and put him in Rikers. And then there, Michael Cohen's also talking about a money trail and what the president knew. And think about this. Just take a step back. You have your own attorney taping you. Taping you. You know, so he comes to the Oval Office. Did he get reimbursed? And what does it mean? Daniel Lipman, a very fair reporter, going back and forth. I think it's good to have reporters like that on. You don't need commentators or Trump fans all the time. Want to give you a balanced report about what's happening in Washington and also what the jury could be thinking. That's key. Just a quick announcement coming up. It's coming up quicker than I thought. At the end of June, I'm going to be in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. And then at the end of July, July 28th, I'll be in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. I'll be able to drive there. Hope to see everybody there. And we'll be following the latest on this trial. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.